There was a young man, very poor. He was a beggar. He was homeless. He was orphaned since childhood, and life had treated him very badly. He was very unhappy. And one day he got tired of this, you know, living in homeless shelters, miserable, unhappy, sad. So he said, I'm going to go meet the Buddha, the wise Buddha, and see when will my sorrow end? What is my destiny? So he starts out on his journey to go meet the Buddha. He walks all day, and by the end of the day, he's very tired, he's exhausted. He looks for any place where he can find shelter. There is nothing. He then sees a very beautiful house, very elaborate palatial house. He said, will they let me stay here? I have no other choice. So he goes and knocks on the door, and comes out this rich man, very well dressed. And he said, sir, I have no place to stay. Can I spend the night? He says, okay. He said, sure, you can spend the night. You can sleep in this room. And as he walks in, he sees this very beautiful girl. She's around 18 or 19. And he greets her, but she only smiles. So the father says, you know, this is my daughter. She's, since birth, she has not been able to speak. She has not spoken a single word. And that's my main sorrow, is when will my daughter speak? I'm very worried. So he spends the night, and next morning the dad asks him, where are you going? He says, I'm going to go meet the Buddha. I want to ask him what is my destiny, because I have so much sorrow in my life. He says, oh, you're going to go meet the Buddha. Why don't you ask him, please, for me, when will my daughter speak? He said, oh, sure, you know, definitely. I mean, you were so nice to me. I'll ask, no problem. So he moves on. He comes to these huge mountains. There's a whole chain of, how am I going to cross? You know, all these mountains I have to walk. He's waiting, and suddenly he sees this old man there carrying a stick. So he says, son, what are you doing? Coming. He says, well, I was just wondering, how am I going to cross these mountains? So he says, you know, I'm a wizard and I have this stick. You hold on to the stick and we can fly together. This stick has a lot of power, it's a magical stick. And you can fly with me and I'll take you across the mountain. And so he holds on to the stick and fly across the mountain. And then when they reach there, the man asks him, where are you going? Why are you crossing all these mountains? He says, well, I've been so unhappy. I'm going to ask the Buddha, what's my destiny? I have so much sorrow. He says, can you ask the Buddha something for me? He says, sure, you know, you've done me this favor. He says, I'm a wizard, and for 1,000 years I have been taking people across these mountains, but I want to go to heaven. And can you ask the Buddha, when will I go to heaven? Because I've been waiting 1,000 years. Says, oh, sure, I'll be happy to ask you. He goes on further, and then he has this huge river to cross. He doesn't know how to swim. There's no bridge. There's no boat. How am I going to cross the river? And there comes this huge turtle, and the turtle asks him, what are you waiting for? He says, I'm waiting for some way to cross the river. He says, I'll take you on my back. He says, you will? Yeah, no problem. So he gets on the turtle's back. Turtle takes him across the river. As he lands him on the other side, he says, where are you going? He says, I'm going to go meet the Buddha. I have to ask him my destiny. When will my sorrow end? So turtle says, you know, for 500 years, I have been taking people across this river. Can you ask the Buddha, when will I become a dragon? I want to become a dragon. I'm tired of living in this turtle, you know, form. I want to be a dragon. Can you ask him? He says, sure, I'll be very happy to. So he goes there, and finally he reaches where the Buddha is, and there's a long line of people waiting to meet the Buddha, and they all have questions. So the attendant tells him, sorry, the time is limited, so all you can do is ask the Buddha 3 questions. Now, this young man has 4, you know, when will my sorrow end? When will the girl speak? When will the wizard go to heaven? For 1,000 years he has been waiting. And when will the turtle become a dragon? 500 years. So he says, my problem is not that bad. You know, these other 3 problems are much worse. So I'll ask the other 3 problems. It's okay. I don't have to ask my problem. Even though he has traveled all this way, he says, it's okay. I won't ask my problem. So he bows down to the Buddha when his turn comes and he says, you know, I have three questions. He says, when will this turtle become a dragon? He tells him about that. The Buddha says, you know what the turtle's problem is? He's so attached to his shell. All he has to do is give up the shell and he has the ability to become a dragon. But he's just not realizing, not knowing it. He's still holding on to his shell. He said, oh, that's simple. He said, yeah, that's simple. And then he says, and then how about the wizard, you know, who is carrying people across? He's doing so much service, you know, with the stick. He says, he's attached to that stick, the staff. All he has to do is give up his attachment to that stick, drop it, and he can go to heaven easily. That's good. And then how about the girl, you know, who has not spoken since childhood? The Buddha says all she has to do is she has to meet her soulmate, the one whom she truly loves and who loves her. Once she meets him, she'll be able to speak. So he says, oh, that's good. So he comes back and the turtle is, did you ask him? So after, of course, he has taken him across the river, you know, because he has to do that. He says, yeah, I asked him. And he said, you know, you're so attached to this shell, this turtle body, you just have to give up this turtle body and you have the capability of becoming a dragon. He said, that's simple. He says, yes. So he drops his shell. He says, I don't need this turtle shell anymore. And under the shell, he has jewels and gold and diamonds and all kinds of precious stones. He says, I don't need them. You can have them. So he gives them all to that young man. He's so thankful. And immediately he drops his shell and he becomes a dragon, beautiful dragon, and he flies away. And he's so happy. He got his destiny. And same thing, the old man carries him across, the wizard, across the mountains. And what did the Buddha say? He says, you know, you're so attached to this stick. The stick has a lot of power, but it is holding you back. All you have to do is drop this stick and you can go to heaven. He said, that's simple. He says, yeah. He says, you can have the stick. So he gives this powerful stick to that young man. And instantly he flies off up and he's gone to heaven. And then now, of course, he has money, he has the stick, so he flies to that girl's house. Before that, he freshens up, you know, takes a bath, has his hair cut, puts on clean clothes, which he hasn't done in years, because now he has the money. And so he walks in to that girl's, actually he knocks on the door, and the father admits him, and the girl looks at him, and she says, isn't this the same man who was here 2 weeks ago? So she meets her soulmate. So the moral of this story, actually this message, is very much applicable to the Bhagavad Gita that we are studying. If you look at the girl, now this young man gave up his own wish for the wish of others. He sacrificed, I don't need to ask what I want. So it says, when you give, you shall receive. That's the message of the Bhagavad Gita, because he sacrificed his own pleasure for the comfort for the other three. He got a lot more than what he was wanting. He got this magic stick, he got all the wealth, and he met the girl of his dreams. So everything came right for him when he decided to serve. See, that is our problem, because we have so much difficulty giving, but when you give, you get a lot more. That's what Krishna tells us in the Bhagavad Gita. Not only you get the emotional benefit of helping somebody, you get the spiritual benefit, but also the material benefit, because the Lord of the universe is infinite. And when you help others, the help you receive from him is far more. So that is the first message of this story, that when you help others, you get a lot more back. As far as the turtle, see, we are all like the turtle. We are so attached to our human body. And we spend all our life taking care of this body, nourishing this body, feeding this body. Which is good, we have to nourish and feed, but we spend all our life accumulating more and more, more and more, everything for the body, more and more possessions. That was the turtle was doing, all this wealth. So you have to give up attachment to this body. Does not mean you have to give up this body and fly away, but the idea that I am not here to just take care of my body, take care of my family, take care of my possessions. My main purpose in life is higher. That I have to evolve, I have to become one with God, I have to discover God within, discover God in all, and become one with that divinity. That's what the turtle did. The moment he gave up attachment, he became one with the higher. So that is our main purpose in life. And we have to always remember, never forget that why am I on this earth? Why do I have this human body? To reach the highest truth. That is the reason for my human birth. And what is holding me back is my ego, my possessions, my sense of ownership, this body. The moment I give up identification with this body, with this ego, I am ready for the higher. And that's the second message of the story, which the Bhagavad Gita, as we go over the months, we will see that. And of course, the wizard, he was an evolved soul. See, he was like a spiritual teacher, you know, or a master who had so many powers. But a lot of times, those who are on the spiritual path and highly evolved get attached to their powers, their ability to speak. I can speak so well, or I have written a book and people are praising my book, or I have this mission or this church or this foundation, and you know, how many people are coming to my church, how many people I can impress, how many people I... So that also becomes, that's called a sattvic. You know, in the Gita, there is the tamasic bondage. Rajasic is what the turtle had. And sattvic is, I get attached to my knowledge. I get attached to my possessions. And even that identification has to be given up. And ultimately, the sense of doership, that I am doing, or I am teaching, or I am doing such a wonderful job, sometimes holds you back. So that is the message of this beautiful story. When I heard it, I was so touched. I said, I have to tell that to my Gita class, because it's totally the Bhagavad Gita in action, if you see that. So anyway, so we'll start our new session. Welcome back. Some of you have been attending in the summer. I think about half of you. Those who have not, what I will do today is I will summarize the first chapter. The chapter one of the Bhagavad Gita is the introduction, and we will go verse by verse, but very briefly. There are a few new people here, so if you permit me, I'll just spend about 5 minutes telling the setting of the Bhagavad Gita, where it was set. So just very briefly, there were a family which had 2 brothers, Dhritarashtra and Pandu. And Dhritarashtra had 100 sons and Pandu had 5 sons. So they were cousins, the 100 sons and the 5 sons. The 100 were evil, they were corrupt, they were dishonest. And the five were very, very good, very honest, very sincere, which is also the story in our life. We have few good qualities and then we have a lot of bad qualities, which then there is a constant battle between the good and the evil. So this is a conflict between the evil and the good. And the evil brothers had stolen, you know, the property, the kingdom was divided among 2, but they had stolen the kingdom from them, cheated them, and done everything to hurt them, even attempting to kill them. And ultimately, the condition was that the Pandavas, the good brothers, 5, had to go to the forest for 12 years and stay in hiding for 1 year. And then after they come back, they will get their half of the kingdom, which was stolen from them. And so the Pandavas did that. They went to the forest for 12 years, and hiding for 1 year, and came back and asked for their rightful share. And then the evil Duryodhana, who was the senior of the Kauravas, he said, I will not give you your kingdom. I will not even give you enough land to cover the tip of a needle. So basically, the land was stolen, and not only that, but the Kauravas were so evil. So when the ruler is corrupt, then the whole country becomes corrupt. And so the country was going downhill, so they had to be removed. And so the Pandavas then said that if we don't get it, then there's no other choice. They tried to negotiate, and there has to be a war. So the Bhagavad Gita is in the setting of the war. The war is about to start. As you can see, Arjuna is the Pandava brother, who is the student, and Krishna is the teacher. The Lord himself, Krishna, was his charioteer. Krishna has said, I'll be on your side, because the Lord is on the side of the good, and drove his chariot, and we can see the 2 armies ready to fight. That's basically the setting of the Bhagavad Gita. So this message of the Bhagavad Gita is given in the middle of the battlefield. What happens, you will see, how this setting comes about. But that is the brief outline of the Mahabharata. Of course, it's 100,000 verses. To give, tell the whole thing probably will take about 5 years, so we don't have that much time. But there are a lot of nice stories in the Mahabharata, which from time to time we'll try to cover. So the situation is that Arjuna asks Krishna, who was his driver, was driving his chariot, to take it in the middle of the two armies, and that's where the teaching starts. So I'll just summarize the first chapter for those who were not here in the summer, so that you may catch up. And then actually the main teaching is in the second chapter. The first chapter is Arjuna's grief, Arjuna's sorrow. And why does he go to sorrow? Even though Arjuna was the greatest warrior of his time, when he saw the situation, he goes into sorrow. So just very briefly, there was the Gita Dhyanam, the introduction, which we have done already. I won't go over that. If those who would like to listen to the previous talks, either on the first chapter or on the introduction, you can go to firstpower.info. It's called firstpower.info. Or if you Google talks by Dr. Anil Mehta, it will take you to firstpower.info, and verse by verse, you can listen. So if you missed in the summer, even if you listen to one or two talks per week, you can catch up. So in the first chapter, in the first verse is the only verse that is spoken by Dhritarashtra, who was the father of the Kauravas. And he says that what is happening in the battlefield. See, he was blind, but his minister Sanjay had a divine vision and ability to see, where sitting in his palace, he could see what was happening in the battlefield several miles away. Not only he could see what was happening, he could go into the minds of the people and know what they are thinking. That was the ability that was given to him by a great sage, Vedvyas, who is the author of the Mahabharata. So he asks him that what is happening in the battlefield, or what has happened, because it was in the past tense. The teaching, the message of Sanjay starts from the 10th day of the battle. And he says, what has happened so far? Please tell me, oh Sanjay, what is happening between the two armies? So Sanjay says that Duryodhana, in the second verse, who is the head of the Kauravas, the oldest brother, goes to his teacher Dronacharya. Dronacharya was his commander. And he says, you know, look, oh Dronacharya, look at the army of the Pandavas. And a lot of them are your students. So even though Dronacharya is his teacher and his guru and his commander, he's already telling him, it's your fault because you have trained all these Pandava brothers and now they are standing against you to fight. So in a way, he's accusing him of, but Dronacharya had taught both the Kauravas and the Pandavas that he was hired by Bhishma to train them. So he said, I just did my job. So he says, look, now they are standing in front of you and they will face you with the same weapons that you taught them. And he says, all these great warriors, he names them, all these great warriors, you know, Pandavas and Virata and Yuyudhana and Draupada and Bhima, Arjuna, they are all here and we have to face them. And he says, you know, who is the one who has trained them? You have. And they are now facing. So see, Duryodhana, even though his army was larger, but he had this guilt because of somebody who has cheated, somebody who has lied, then his mind is always filled with doubt, you know, whether I will win or I will not win. But if you have done the right thing, then you have nothing to fear about. Even also in any time in life, if you have, say, cheated on your taxes or if you have done something dishonest, you're always worried. But if you have done everything right, then there's nothing to fear. Anybody can come and check. So same way, he first points out the Pandava army. Look how great they are. And then he says, you know, but I also have a good army and they are all here for me. See the difference between him and Arjuna. Arjuna always talks about us, we Pandavas, we. He never talks about I. In the beginning he does, but a lot of times his attitude is we. But Duryodhana is, they are all here to fight for me. I am the supreme commander. He says, they are all here to fight for me. But I am not sure whether we will win or they will win. Even though my army is bigger, but I'm not sure because the warriors... See, when you are right, then you are inspired to fight. When you are on the wrong, then you are paid to fight, but you don't have the inner enthusiasm. So that's what he feels, that maybe I don't know if my army is good enough to fight those. But then he says, you know what? All of you should protect Bhishma. Now, Bhishma was the greatest warrior on both sides. There was nobody equal to him. Even though he was the grandfather, he was senior, he was the best. Not only as a warrior, but as a spiritual person, very gentle, very loving, very compassionate, very kind. And he had taken care of both the sides, the Pandavas and the Kauravas. He had made sure they got good education and all the knowledge. He says, protect him because he had Ichcha Mrityu. He was given a boon that nobody can kill him. He can only die when he decides to die. So he had the choice that he could select the day and time when he should give up his life. That much power he had. So he says, all of you need to protect him because if he goes down, we are all down because he's the best. And so when all this is going on, then Bhishma realizes that this young man is just blabbering, you know, talking and insulting his guru and just creating problems. He says, let's begin the war, you know. So he blows his conch loudly and lets out a lion's roar. And when he does, all the Kauravas blow the conch. In those days, conch was like nowadays, you know, when a football, when your team is playing, everybody says, you know, come on, come on. They cheer their team, you know, defense, defense, you know, they all shout so that their team should get encouraged. So similarly, before a battle, they used to blow their conches, which were very loud. And then also they had drums and, you know, all these other noise-making trumpets and all to improve the morale of the army so that they should fight. Like here also, we have, you know, cheerleaders and then we have drums and all this before a game. So they were all that was, the Kauravas first had their chance. And then the Pandavas had even louder, the drums and their conches, and all of them blew their conches. Here Sanjay is describing, whatever we are listening, Sanjay has been telling the old king in the palace. So we are listening to a running commentary, blow by blow commentary, as they say, you know, like Vijay Merchant, or they used to give commentaries in cricket, or here also during games. If you are not watching, then on the radio, if you are listening, on the TV at least you can see, but on the radio, they have to describe everything in detail. So that's what is happening. So the Pandavas also blew their conches and now they were both ready to fight. The Pandavas are ready, the Kauravas are ready. And at that time, Arjuna tells Krishna, he says, Senayor Ubhayor Madhye Ratham Sthapaya Me Achyuta. He says, oh Krishna, please put my chariot between the two armies. Why? Because I want to see who are these evil people that I have to fight against. Because the people on the other side are dishonest, they are crooked, they have been cheating the country, they have cheated us, and they need to be removed. And we have tried to negotiate with them, but there is no solution. So let me see who is it that I have to fight or that has to be fought by me. He uses the positive the passive voice. And so Krishna says, okay, no problem. So he takes his chariot, puts it in between the two armies, because Krishna was a driver. Even though he was the lord of the universe, he had agreed to drive his chariot. So he's a chauffeur. He says, okay, sir, wherever you tell me, I'll take the chariot. So he puts it in front, but he puts it in front of Bhishma and Drona. Bhishma was the grandfather whom they all respected, and Drona was that guru, their teacher. And in our tradition, a guru is like God. You know, it's like more than mother and father. And so Arjuna sees now his guru, his grandfather, and then all his cousins and his uncles and, you know, other assistant gurus, you know, other teachers. And he says, are these the people I have to fight? Suddenly his mind gets... And then in his mind, he thinks about what's going to happen. Now this war is between two divisions of the same family. And war in those days was... you know, to the end, and basically till one side was completely destroyed. And then he visualizes what is going to happen. And he says, you know, seeing this, I'm confused. He says, my mouth is dry, my body is shaking, my hair is standing on end, and, you know, I can't speak, I can't think properly. Because in his mind, he's going through what will happen as a consequence of the war. But in the mistake he makes, he thinks that I am fighting. See, the I comes in there where I have to now fight against these people. And the message of the Bhagavad Gita is that whatever you are assigned to do, see, his job was a warrior. From childhood, he had been trained to be a warrior. And now there is an opportunity, which we'll cover more in the second chapter, where he has to fight a dharma yuddha, a fight for good. He's representing good. He's fighting against evil. And there is no other choice. These people, it's like, I have given the example before, it's like when Hitler was taking over all of Europe. Now, America could have said, you know, it's not our war. You know, let us stay out of it. But they said no, because the force of evil is taking over Europe, and eventually it will dominate the whole world. So it has to be removed. And so that's, so even though some people were against, you know, oh, we should not get involved in the war. It's, you know, it will kill a lot of American soldiers and all that. But we still did that to fight on the side of the good and to remove the evil. There was no other way. See, they tried to negotiate with Hitler. Chamberlain did that, and it was a total failure. So this was a similar situation. But he is only thinking about the consequences of the war. He says, you know, I don't wish to win. I don't even wish to fight. Because if I fight, there will be so much bloodshed, there will be so much slaughter. And even if I win, what will I get? I'll get this kingdom, no doubt. But my hands will be stained with blood. Because he was the best warrior on the Pandava side. I would have killed my grandfather, my teacher, my cousins, my uncles. And so much bloodshed is there, so I don't wish to fight. And so he immediately gets very confused. His body is shivering. His mouth is dry. And he says, you know, look at all those in front of us. I see uncles. I see father. I see grandfathers. People are fighting against each other. There are teachers. There are uncles. There are cousins. There are fathers-in-law, mothers-in-law. And even if they kill me, Krishna says, but they are here to kill you. If you don't fight and you lie down, they will cut off your head. So I'm ready for that. I'm ready to give up my life, but I do not wish to pick up a bow and arrow and be a part of this war. So he says, even forget about this kingdom. Even if you give me the kingdom of the three worlds, even if I become king of heaven and earth and all the worlds, even if I conquer heaven, I still do not wish to fight the war, because it is sin. See, his idea is that it is sinful to fight. But in this situation, it is sinful not to fight. See, not doing your duty when you are faced with evil and you run away and you say, okay, you can have it. All you're doing is encouraging evil to grow, because the Kauravas are not going to reform. All they're going to do is keep growing, and they will take more of India. And all that, they will destroy the and the other thing is, even if Arjuna doesn't fight, the other Pandavas are there to fight. The army is ready, so he's not going to be able to stop the destruction. So I do not want the kingdom. I do not want any joy. I do not want any happiness. And the Krishna says, but they are ready to fight. He says they are greedy. Their mind is corrupted. Let them be. But at least we see that it is wrong to fight. Why should we not give up? Why should we fight when we know what is right and when we know what is wrong? They don't know what is right. So it's like saying, you know, somebody, a robber comes, you say, he doesn't know what is right, what is wrong. Let him steal my house. You're not going to do that. You know, because just because he doesn't know what is right, and what did you say? Oh, he poor guy, he's had a bad childhood. He was very abused. So he wants to come and steal my house. Let him. No, you don't do that. You protect your house. So this is his thinking is wrong. His thinking is perverted. Then he goes on to tell Krishna that what will happen as a consequence of the war. Thousands of young men will die. And when they die, the wives will be left without husbands. The children will be left without a father. And if the women, and then, and when the family structure is destroyed, who will maintain our culture? See, the Hindu culture goes back thousands of years, you know, even 8 or 10,000 years before Christ. The Hindu civilization was very active and very flourishing in India. And they had this culture where, you know, the father and the son and taking care of the family, who will take care of the seniors, who will take care of the wife, who will take care of the children. And once the family structure is destroyed, then all our traditions will die, you know, because there is a tradition in India where the ancestors are honored every year. Just as we go, you know, to the graves, people go to the grave of their mother or grandmother and offer flowers on the day, either on the birthday or the day of their anniversary of their death. And you respect and honor the dead. So similarly, there are customs where they offer rice balls and water to their ancestors. And so he says, all this, our traditions and cultures will be destroyed. Who will honor our ancestors? And it is said that when you do charity in the name of your ancestors, and that's what they do on their death anniversary, they feed the poor and the homeless, then the ancestors go on their spiritual journey. It helps them. So it is believed that the offerings here do go to the subtle worlds. So who will do that? And then the wives who are left without husbands, how will they make a living? Maybe they'll, you know, get into bad, you know, bad actions, you know, because they have to somehow survive. And so the women will be corrupted, they will be polluted. And when the women are corrupted, women are the backbone of society. You know, the family is held together by women. Even though the husband will go out and work, but it is the woman who takes care of the children, who makes sure the house is maintained, make sure all the religious practices are maintained, all the culture is maintained. So the most of the burden of the family falls upon the wife. And when she is corrupted and polluted, what's going to happen to the culture? So the points he makes are right, but regardless, the solution is not running away from the battle. You have to stand and do your duty. So that is the status of. And then he ends by saying that, you know, if we fight this war, we are committing a sin. And if we commit a sin, we'll go to hell. So he, even though Krishna was the Lord, he was his, you know, he's trying to teach him. He's trying to tell him things which Krishna already knew. See, Krishna was, you know, I mean, he was the Lord of the universe who was living on this earth among us as a human. But he's trying to teach. Actually, he's more than trying to teach. He's talking within himself. See, when I am not sure, or when I'm confused, or when I'm not sure what is right, what is my goal, people sometimes talk too much. And they start talking, they started teaching others, and they start telling others. It's like he's talking to his own mind. He's trying to convince himself that he's right. So that is where the first chapter ends, and at the end of the first chapter, it's called Arjuna's grief. He sits down on the chariot. Instead of being standing, he sits down, puts his bow and arrow, and he says, I can't fight. And his mind is full with sorrow. Shok samvigna manasaha. His mind is totally overwhelmed with sorrow. So he's feeling very pity for himself. You know, what a bad situation I am in. What should I do? So that's where the first chapter ends. So this is pretty much what we covered in the summer. We did a few of the second chapter verses. I'll cover them in a minute. But does anybody have any questions or comments so far? Yes.
So before the war, Arjuna had no idea that Krishna was the Lord. Is that correct? Or did he maybe?
Yeah, he did not know that he was the Lord. He knew that he was somebody special. But he did not know until the 11th chapter when he shows him his divine form. He thought of Krishna as his friend, as his brother-in-law, as a cowherd. But he knew there was something special about him. That's why he had a choice whether to take Krishna as himself or to take the entire army. Krishna had said when Duryodhana and Arjuna both showed up in Krishna's home, and Krishna was sleeping, and so they were waiting by his bed. And when he woke up, he saw them both. And he said, what would you like? They said, both said, we have come for your help because the war is about to break out. So Krishna says, I cannot help you both. You can either have me or you can have my whole army. And his whole army was thousands of soldiers, very, very well equipped, very trained, well trained. And he said, if I am on your side, I won't pick up a weapon. I won't fight. I'll just be on your side. And Arjuna said, I pick you. And Duryodhan said, you know, Krishna without weapons is useless. Let me have his army. So Duryodhan was very happy to have his army. Arjuna picked Krishna because he had some idea that he's a, you know, he's a special individual. And he was his close friend and brother-in-law and all that. But the true, his true divine nature, he only finds out in the 11th chapter, where he shows his whole form. He shows the whole universe is in me. So that's when his thinking totally changes.